Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Throw game for the win! Taylor's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, sports fans. Welcome to another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Greg Rakestraw joining me early on from the ISC Sports Network as well. Greg, how was your weekend, my friend? What a beautiful background, by the way.
Thank you. This is my vacation home in Michigan, but I don't want to take a vacation from talking with you, even after the unfortunate. I think I was in this seat when I saw somebody tear their Achilles tendon last night. In fact, maybe I should switch chairs. Man. Something bad might happen early in the broadcast.
What is it about? Has it been about Achilles tendons? This seems like over the last year, so many big stars, and it's not like we haven't. That's not an injury that hasn't happened before, but it just seems like there has been several more within the last year of guys that just really that has hit. I mean, and you want to talk about maybe one of the most serious injuries in all of sports is the Achilles, right? Because brother, without the Achilles, you're not doing jack.
We can go down this rabbit hole if you want to. I would say probably years of overuse. I would say that we are probably testing the limits of what a human being can do athletically. That's how high end these guys are at the NBA level that are getting hurt. As well as Tyrese Halliburton, you know, played last summer, you know, playing on Team USA. Obviously, both guys went deep into their postseasons. You know, you kind of saw that even to a lesser degree with Klay Thompson because of how many postseason games that the, you know, Golden State Warriors, you know, kept playing. Again, yes, these guys are rewarded amazingly well for playing a game and playing it also amazingly well. That does take a lot of wear and tear on your body. And I think all of us thought that when that calf injury kind of became known in game five, it was, oh, no. I mean, I think Tyrese Halliburton was aware of what he was flirting with. And I think of our buddy Jake Query when he says squeeze the juice out of life. Well, kind of the inverse of that is, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze? And in the NBA Finals, the answer is yes. I think he fully went into game six and game seven knowing from an injury standpoint what potentially he was flirting with. And awfully in the first quarter, that worst case scenario happened. The Pacers gutted it out for as long as they could, but just didn't have the arsenal to keep up with the Thunder by the time we got to half number two.
And they kept it more than respectable, as a matter of fact, to be on the road, to be in a game seven, to be without your guy, to lose him in the game, all of that mental aspects that hit you, they stayed with them, but like you said, and it's not quite enough to beat what was the best team in the NBA this year. But hell of a run for the Indiana Pacers this season. The fans, just everything. It has just been an incredible season. But that's not how they're going to view it at the end of the day. I understand that.
It's not the Hollywood ending. You know, this is not the roll credits moment. And I want to make sure, again, I have done the post-Super Bowl show one of the coolest days in my career was doing 4 hours of radio the day after the Indianapolis Colts won a Super Bowl. And I'll typically, it was the easiest 4 hours of radio I think I've ever done in my life. Because we just said, this just happened, call the show, let's react. Let's belly up to the bar, let's go to the water cooler. You know, I saw people talking about productivity was going to be in an all-time low today, and people were going to, you know, have the Pacers flu. BS. People were going to want to show up to work just to talk about it, you know, if things had gone a different way. And so kind of my attitude today is, hey, listen, we can worry about next year down the road now because of playing this far into this season. Folks, next year is less than 4 months away. All right. It's the draft is 2 days from now. Now that we're to Monday morning and not to Sunday night, the Pacers, by the way, no longer have a pick in the first round because they simply don't have the cap space to really, you know, and nor a roster spot, even with Halliburton's injury, to kind of bring somebody in. And Jim, if you want to go through the depth chart as to what it's going to look like without Tyrese, I'm more than happy to do that. But my mindset today is, hey, I want to be appreciative of the ride the Pacers took us on for the last 2 months. My wife is just on camera. She couldn't care less about the Pacers. She was locked into watching the game with me last night. And that story was repeated all throughout Central Indiana. This will have a ripple effect for generations in terms of people wanting to be Indiana Pacers fans. And so, yeah, last night sucked. But you know what? The last 2 months were awesome and totally worth it, even with the wrong ending last night.
Absolutely. Now, the scary thing is that you just mentioned that the season is only 4 months away.
Yeah.
Well, one of the most difficult injuries to return from because of length of time is the Achilles. And that means that the Pacers will not have, most likely, Tyrese Halliburton to start the season. I don't know how serious it was, if it was a tear, if it was how far, but these are serious injuries.
Right, and so I would almost think the best-case scenario for Tyrese would be around the All-Star break. You know, these are starting to get to, kind of like ACLs, where you can get at least a 6 to 9 months. But frankly, because you've got this group together, for the most part, you know, for a couple, 3 more years, and because of the depth this group has, I think that it's going to be, hey, let's, you know, your injury timetable, you know, is going to dictate when you return. Let's not set a date, especially on day one of recovery before there's any sort of surgery or things like that. But there's nobody like Tyrese, but there is an overabundance of players. And you can now kind of make the pieces fit, even without Tyrese. So will this team be as good in the regular season as they would have been with Tyrese? No. Are the Pacers probably looking at something similar from a seeding perspective where you kind of got to go steal home court as they did, you know, so successfully in 2 series in the Eastern Conference and, you know, kind of did so at least temporarily in the NBA Finals? Yes. So all is not lost. I'm not Kevin Bacon in Animal House saying all is well, but it's truly not the end of the world, even from a basketball standpoint for the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, and T.J. McConnell, man, again, doing more T.J. McConnell things as he can. But, boy, it just kills me when a guy like that can go in and score 10 straight points on and most of them in the paint when you're 6'2" or whatever he is. And just he's an amazing specimen.
This is not an apples-to-apples comparison, but you and I are of a similar age, where I think you'll recognize these players. And again, I know you're obviously your passion for the shirt that I'm wearing today with Indiana basketball. That wasn't planned by those happened to be wearing this. And so I know you approve. Remember what we say about Jay Burson playing for Ohio State back in the 80s? And we're like, that dude's the manager. How is that guy doing what he's doing at a college level? Obviously remember Richie Farmer from the Unforgettables in Kentucky. And he was a 6-foot hairy as all get out shooting guard. I mean, he was the definition of the mountain man. He led the SEC in 3-point shooting and mustache when he played at Kentucky. and you kept going, how is this guy doing what he is doing? Well, the NBA version of that is T.J. McConnell. You know, T.J. looks like he should be the team accountant, not the backup point guard, you know, not one of the best players on the floor. And obviously, you know, Indiana Pacers fans, their love affair has grown with him over these last, you know, 2, 3, 4 seasons. And his role will now expand next year. Simply put, Andrew Nembhard now slides over to be your starting point guard. I think TJ's role largely stays the same. Maybe you play him a few more minutes as the number two, but the guy that now all of a sudden there is a path for him. There's two guys that now go, okay, I now know what my role is on this team. One is Benedict Mathurin. And there was a pretty big discussion, at least in the sports talk realm, at the beginning of the year. Hey, who's your starting three? Because it was going to be Ty at the one, Nembhard at the two. Is it Nesmith or Mathurin? And I would tell everybody that would listen, Nesmith is your three because of what he does defensively and because he fits better off of Nembhard and Halliburton, who both need the ball, and off Siakam, who needs the ball. You know, Nesmith can be your 3-and-D guy. And he frankly played that role better than I think anybody thought he would as the season went along. And Mathurin is the guy you simply give him the ball when he's with the second unit and go get yours. And his playing time is dictated by just how hot his hand was going to be. Well, now, Benedict Mathurin is your starting two guard. Okay, Nembhard's the one, Mathurin's the two. You keep Nesmith on the floor. But now you look at Benedict Mathurin, and to be blunt, Jim, he is playing for a contract, probably for somebody else, just because you're about to max out and go into the salary cap to bring back Miles Turner, as you should, to reward somebody that has been loyal and faithful to the team and a key piece now for 10 years. Okay. He's going to get two or three more years. It's going to be his last big contract, but that really kind of limits the Pacers to the guys they have on the current roster. So for Benedict Mathurin, he has 1 year to showcase his skills to go play, then probably sign a bigger contract for somebody else. The other guy that now knows the role that he has, and you didn't see him in the finals because he got hurt at the end of the Eastern Conference Finals, now Jairus Walker has a defined role coming off the bench. And there's almost been this debate, Jim, in terms of, you know, is Jairus a two? Is he a three? Is he a four? Do you play him as a small ball five? Now he is probably more of that 3-4 range, because Mathurin moves to the starting five. Now there's guaranteed minutes for Jairus Walker. And so again, are you as good of a basketball team without Tyrese Halliburton? No. Are you a bad basketball team without Tyrese Halliburton? No. This is still a really good basketball team, and now there's just going to be a bit more of a challenge, but one, frankly, Jim, I think they can overcome.
Yeah, they were such a balanced team this year, and that helped them not cover up any flaws, but not have as many flaws, really, because you've always got somebody else that could step up if someone was not having that night. Now, losing Tyrese Halliburton, that's huge, because that's not just your average Joe. But I think as a team, we'll see what they can do to replace that. Now, are they going to bring anybody else in the interim, do you think?
No, I think knowing that you really had 11 guys for 9 or 10 spots, to me, the only debate is going to be is the backup five position. Is it Thomas Bryant? Is it Tony Bradley? Is it Isaiah Jackson, who much like James Wiseman, they tore their Achilles within a week of each other at the start of the year, which is why guys like Bradley and Bryant were signed. You know, Thomas is a good three-point shooter. It kind of plays a lot like Miles Turner, but is not the defensive player that Miles is. That's the limitation that Thomas has in terms of being kind of an end-of-roster, you know, NBA guy. Simply put, the salary cap money's not there. And this team is going to go into the luxury tax, which they have been very reticent to do, just to reward Miles Turner and to keep the core together. So, no, they will build this from within. What it does mean is that there is probably a better chance for a second-round pick to make the team. And does that player even be a kind of a rotational piece? Probably not, because I think those pieces already exist, because they were struggling to find minutes for Mathurin, Shepherd, and Walker. Well, now you divvy up about 30 more minutes, 35 more minutes a game between those three guys. Again, those pieces all fit. So, no, you're going to see this group continue on as they are. And again, Jim, I think for a good chunk of the regular season, they're going to be okay with that. I really do.
And this is a team that, like we said, we saw that was built as a team without superstars per se.
Right.
So the fact is they were able to play that way together. A lot of times you can't. You have people fighting to be that superstar. That was not something I saw on this team. They were literally taking their roles seriously.
And that's why it's not a death sentence for him without Halliburton. That exact reason why is that, yes, Tyrese was their best player. Tyrese was their most clutch player. Tyrese has a gear that nobody else on that team can get to. But as we saw, and it wasn't like if Tyrese had a great game, Pacers won. If Tyrese had a bad game, Pacers lost. It certainly was more likely they would have won if he had a great game. But because he wasn't the only guy that carried the scoring amounts, it's why this is not a death sentence for the 25-26 season. Folks, it's really not.
Yeah, that's the probably the more amazing thing. Also going on over the weekend, the Charlie Hughes happening in and around the Indianapolis area at Carmel and Westfield. So one of the bigger events of the year for high school grassroots basketball. Coaches were out. I know the Indiana coaches were out, and I'm sure there were several others. As anybody who's everybody in the state of Indiana from a player standpoint, from the 28 class on up to today with Noah Washington and many, many others were on display up in Carmel and Westfield.
They were. And Jim, basically about a third of the high school basketball teams in the state from the boys' perspective play in this event. So you play games in Carmel's gymnasium. Westfield now kind of is a part of that as well. Able to get back and forth. Base, everybody plays four times. Usually it's two on Saturday and two on Sunday to kind of make it all fit. I saw great things about Caleb Kuhlman, you know, up from Penn, and he was a guy I know you talked about last week, and I know his dad very well. Obviously, is a longtime basketball coach these days at Penn, formerly at Valparaiso. I want to say was at Northrop before that. Caleb, obviously, just like Noah Washington, is going to be a sophomore. But again, that those are the kids that now Darren DeVries needs to be on, and I have full faith that, you know, you have the best of both worlds now. All right, you have the NIL resources to go out and get the best players available. The methodology that IU used properly last year and just couldn't make the pieces fit. You have to live in both worlds, okay? You have to go out and get the one or two best mid-major players that are looking to move, and or you have to then get the best kids from your state that IU really hasn't competed for almost for the last two coaching cycles, you know, in this team or you know, at Indiana University. So, you know, those are the names you want to watch over the next couple of years, knowing that both of those two kids are still 3 years away from setting foot on a high school or on a college campus.
Yeah, and Silver Creek, a team that didn't really hit the they weren't really one of the big timers until a certain Trey Kaufman Wren had brought them back to prominence a few years ago. Well, now they've got another kid. They're apparently the favorite in 3A for this year.
I would think they would be one of them, yes. I mean, Kaysen Dager as a guard is a very talented player. They've got others as well. It's a pretty talented group on both the boys and girls side that have gone through Silver Creek. And I think Silver Creek is one of the teams, you know, there's the law of unintended consequences. Silver Creek enrollment rise was really starting to flirt with getting to 4A. And if you go back to when Trey was there and Northern and Cooper Jacoby, you know, when they won the 3A title in 21, that was that rare year where I would have said, like, okay, let's reinstitute the Tournament of Champions for 1 year. Give me Bar Reeve, Blackhawk Christian, Silver Creek, and Carmel. Those four, like, all played each other during the course of the season, and shameless self-promotion. You can go back and watch a lot of those games on the ISC Sports Network at iscsportsnetwork.com. It's the one time that I go, you know what? I kind of want to see the 1A and 4A champ play each other, because I did that game, and it went to overtime at Carmel before Carmel found a way to beat Bar Reeve right before the Christmas holiday. But Silver Creek, when 4A shrunk, it ensured that Silver Creek was going to stay at the 3A level. Absolutely, they are a threat, and they contend to win the 3A championship, Jimmy, this coming year.
Yeah, they've got Dane Caldwell, a name to know there as well. So then you've got Noah Washington in the 28 class at New Albany. So a lot of talent coming out of the South as well. So it's going to be a great mixture all around from from Penn all the way up in the north, all the way down to the southern part.
Let me tell you this. I had a chance to meet Noah and his father at the Futures game about 3 weeks ago. Cannot tell you how impressed I was by meeting Mr. Washington. I'm like, you know what? This kid has that level of talent and seemingly pretty good parents around him. I think big things are going to happen for Noah Washington. He's got the right environment in which to do that.
Makes a huge difference, man. Yes, huge does. Difference.
Yep.
Well, I hope you enjoy your vacation. Are you going to do some skiing? We one-legged skiing, slalom skiing, anything special?
I'm going to turn the camera. You see this pool? That's
right
there. So this is our little kind of quiet hideaway that's tucked away. We're not far from the lake. So we've got all like the little town shops offerings that way I have my bougie coffee every morning, the way that I normally do. But it's me, pool, air conditioning pool, coffee shop in the morning, alcoholic beverage poolside, rinse and repeat until the end of the week.
Oh, Robert, one last thing. The truth down in Evansville asking, what up with the big man at NCS? I guess that's North Central. He's 6'10".
I think he'd be asking about Isaiah Hill at Pike. Who is young? Who is like 6'11" or 7 foot?
Defensively,
he is a major college prospect right now. It's where old dudes like you and I have to change our mindset, right? Like one of the first things I think about with Isaiah Hill is can he put weight on that frame? Now let's again just go back to last night. Chet Holmgren is a walking series of toothpicks. But look at the impact he had on last night's game. And so old fuddy-duddies like us look at Hill and go, hey, what are you doing outside shooting threes? Well, frankly, because of his body type is almost identical to a Chet Holmgren. And so defensively, he could be a rim protector in the Big Ten, seriously, right now. His timing, his length is that good. I'm not sure physically how much more weight he can put on. So if you see him start to drift outside and knock down shots, again, that's how he can be an impact player. He will be a junior coming up this season, will Isaiah.
You know, you mentioned Chet Holmgren. I saw him play probably 4 years ago out in Portland, the NCAA tournament. And I just remember how thin he was. And I'm like, what's he? But they could not move him out. It was not like I was amazed on how he managed to hold his positions and how he was able to do the things he was able to do, because I thought that they're just going to knock him into the fourth row, and it didn't happen. These guys have their own type of strength.
Jimmy, the issue that he runs into, I think, is more of a issue of, you know, health. You know, when he's missing games, that is what that concerns you about that body type. Is can you play 82 games a year? But at the same time, for all the weight training and different stuff that we can do, you are what you're going to be. If you're, I'm the opposite. A guy that can't put weight on, you have to be able to go and kind of play in the fashion in which kind of God intended you to do from a body type standpoint.
Five Lefts ask Greg if Coach DeVries should recruit Mason Darrell out of Crown Point. I think that's a no. Just kidding. I think we just lost a connection, but that's okay. He's on vacation. Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network. Grateful to have him along, especially him taking time out of his busy vacation to join us. Appreciate him. We've got lots more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios, and we're back with it on the other side of this first break. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. So grateful to have you along, no matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call down in Evansville, or up in the region on the Voice of the Region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked right where you have it. You've got it in the right spot all day. Football, a little recruiting action news. Warren Central's Jeremy Fentz, one of the best players in all of the state, has committed to Alabama. That was not his recruiting was well on its way. by the time Kurt Cignetti got into tow, but one of the absolute best players, if not the best player in the state, defensive lineman for that vaunted Warren Central line, man. He is certainly a player, but he's heading to the Crimson Tide to play for Kalen DeBoer. He's a defensive end, of course, second ranked in the state, prospect of the 2026 class. Announced his commitment to Alabama on Sunday on Instagram. He's a 6'3", 260-pounder. He picked the Crimson Tide over Miami, Florida, Michigan, Tennessee. Took his official visit there at the end of May. Not a surprise, as they had a – but, oh, my gosh, Warren Central, they have got – they have a star-studded defensive line from last season. Damian Shanklin, who went to LSU. Tyrone Burris, who is going to Indiana. Marcus Bell Jr. is going to Campbellsville. It's one of the biggest strengths of the versatility of trait. Just without question, that had to be the best defensive line in the state of Indiana. How many have putting three of the four into major P4 programs? Yeah, that's something. Wow. He is the eighth high school commitment in the 2026 class for Alabama. Not a big class. Not a big class. Indiana's got, like, what are they up to? 12, 13, 14 now? Five-star shooting forward, Caleb Gaskins, break down his recruitment between Louisville, Miami, Indiana, and Florida State. He is on threes, number 11th ranked player in the 2026 class. He's a 6'8 small forward. Just finished his junior year at Miami of Florida, Columbus High School. And is that where the Mendoza brothers went? I'm thinking Columbus High School is where they're from. I'll have to look that up. But he's playing with the Knight Riders program on the Nike EYBL circuit this summer, averaging 16.5 points. Says he feels like he's gotten more comfortable handling the ball, more confident in his shot. Defensively, I like Amen Thompson, just the way he guards on and off the ball. Offensively, I watch a little bit of Anthony Edwards and Kevin Durant. He opens up on the teams that are aforementioned teams, Texas, Louisville, Miami, Florida State, and Indiana. And on Indiana, he says, they think that I can be a big-time player. They also like how I can really fit in anywhere. They say that is how they are trying to play, and I fit their system. They like that I'm a plug-in guy, that if you need me to guard someone, I will. If you need me to make shots, I will. Kind of gives you an indication of that Indiana is going to be more of a positionless type team in the future, which is not something that we don't haven't really gathered so far. Tay McKinney brings his official visit to Kentucky today. Also an Indiana recruit. All kinds of names bouncing around in the Hoosier.com on three if you want to keep up with them. Boy, it's tough because it's that time of year. It is that time of year, but the Hoosier.com with on three is chocked full of the recruiting news for both basketball and football, as there are multitudes. 2028 quarterback Luke Rubley, thrilled by Indiana offer. And, you know, I talked last week about Indiana really deep into the recruiting. They're not just into these 2026 guys, 27. It's recruiting has got to be as hard as it's ever been nowadays, because you still have to recruit as fervently as you used to, but the transfer portal takes up probably 2/3 of your team. I mean, truth be told, a recruiting class is not going to take up half your roster. So you still have to put in the same amount of recruiting effort, but yet not expecting to get or keep these guys for that long. very difficult. To me, it makes it even more difficult than what it used to be. But it is recruiting that time of year. So Fred says, hot day out here. Hell, it's a hot day everywhere. Some iced hard truth is on the agenda. That sounds like a perfect addition. But yeah, it is hot. Hot is right. Man, I would not want to be outside doing much of anything. I did play golf Saturday with some old buds. Mark Helmer, Shannon Stone came up. And I don't know if it was the good luck, if it was the heat, but I played my best round ever. I couldn't believe it. Don't know what prompted that, but it was there. It happened. Nothing to write home about, but it was for me. The truth needs a job. Somebody help out Robert. 68 days until kickoff. The truth says it will be a great year for IU sports. I believe that. Could be interesting to see who it's a great year for. Been a great year for the state of Indiana, to be honest with you. Oh, how about Chase Briscoe? Hey, forgot almost. Chase Briscoe from Mitchell, Indiana. What were they at? Pocono yesterday in the NASCAR series. Pretty dominant win. Man, he's been fast this year. He started the season off winning the pole for Daytona for the Daytona 500. Hasn't gotten a lot done in the race as far as the racing finishes, but yesterday that changed. Now he's into playoffs, man. You get that win earmarked for the end of season playoffs, bumped him up there. That's a huge deal. His first win with he races for Joe Gibbs Racing now. So how cool is that? But the racer from right down the road here, Mitchell, little old Mitchell, what I call the fastest county in the world. You've got, of course, Chase Briscoe, the NASCAR driver, and the multiple former NASA astronauts that went into space. But congratulations to Chase Briscoe getting his second, just his second NASCAR win. And a big one, as that one is his first for Joe Gibbs, like I said. Fred says that he was coached by Dale Jr. at Pocono yesterday. Who is Shannon Stone? Well, he's someone that's a friend of mine that came up, played golf with me this weekend. Russell? Sounds like a professional wrestler, doesn't he? Would have been a good professional wrestling name. But Chase Briscoe, man, that's a huge deal. They've been running well, been running fast, but just could not get the finishes so far. But now you've got he's earmarked for the playoffs with that win. I think they've had, I don't know, 11, 12 different winners this year. Maybe more. There's only, 16 make the playoffs. Huge win. Dominant, as a matter of fact, man. They could not get to him. As he was making rounds at the end. And kept the speed up very high. Pressure pack series race at Pocono, it says. Chase Briscoe earned the NASCAR Cup Series season best 4 pole positions. I did not realize that. He's won 4 pole positions this year. Wow. And he's led laps in 8 different races so far this season. That's what I'm saying. They just haven't been able to put it together. But it came down to the suspensible very final laps, Briscoe having to save as much fuel as possible. Yeah, they were wondering if he was going to make it on fuel because they didn't get enough in on, I think it was his last pit stop. But he made it, perfectly executing throttle control to maintain the lead and not run his car out of gas, ultimately beating Denny Hamlin across the line by just over a half a second. To formally punch his win and 2025 playoff ticket. The 30-year-old Indiana native led a best 72 of 160 laps on the day and even had enough fuel to do a well-deserved victory celebration. But, boy, I saw the chunks of rubber flying off of his tires when he was doing that. But how cool is that? And you've got the Brickyard coming up. I mean, he's been running well. How big would that be? Get an Indiana guy to win the Brickyard, but it's happened twice over. Tony Stewart, Jeff Gordon, both have won the Brickyard. Jason said he used to watch him at Bloomington Speedway. Yeah, I was there last year. He was there last year just before the Brickyard, which would probably be his last opportunity to get down to the Bloomington Motor Speedway, but that was pretty cool. So congratulations to Chase Briscoe. Not a bad deal, man. I'm just telling you, it's pretty cool having someone that is, and he is as down to earth as they get. If you've ever had a chance to meet him, if you've ever been that fortunate, I'm telling you, he's as down to earth. The family is as down to earth, just a typical Hoosier family. But congratulations to him, and hopefully that continues, man, because they're with a good team. Joe Gibbs, that's a serious racing team. And like I said, they had been doing well, running fast. I didn't realize he'd had as many poles as he had for this season. But probably means there's good stuff coming yet. And we shall see. Hey, we've got to take a break from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Plenty more coming up. Fun Dustin DePierrick will join us at some point as well. But plenty more coming from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. We're back with it and more after these messages. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. Glad to have you along. How was your weekend other than hot? Because, man, let me tell you, Friday night was incredible. It was beautiful out into the evening. The temperatures were nice. And then Saturday morning, it was like at some point around 3 a.m., somebody turned the heat on because, buddy, that morning it was hot. And I mean hot. And it stayed that way. But that kind of happens in summer times. It gets warm. Cleveland Browns rookie quarterback Shedeur Sanders got a lead foot, man. Cited twice this month for speeding. Speeding citation for driving 101 miles per hour this week. Wasn't the first time he was cited in Ohio alone this month. According to Medina, Ohio Municipal Court records, it was filed June 6th. Sanders was pulled over by Ohio State Patrol earlier this month in that alleged violation, which took place June 5th in Brunswick Hills, Ohio. The Ohio State Patrol told WJW-TV that Sanders was stopped for driving 91 in a 65. So My man better slow it down. It's dangerous, number one. It's dangerous. That you're getting up 100 miles an hour. That's a little scary. According to the record, Sanders failed to appear for his arraignment for that citation on Monday. Faces $269 in fines and course. Now, usually they put out a warrant out for your arrest. Doesn't sound like that happened this time. Because he was then stopped by an officer from the Strongsville, Ohio Police Department at 12:24 Tuesday morning for driving 41 miles an hour over the posted 60 mile an hour speed limit. Now, how many people can do this and not be arrested? Not many. You don't appear for a court appearance. They generally put out a warrant. And it's, I mean, okay. I mean, you wonder why people get PO'd. This kind of stuff. Treat them like normal people. The Browns have addressed the citations with Sanders, according to Cleveland.com. He is taking care of the tickets, team spokesman Peter Jean-Baptiste told the media outlet. For the most recent citation, Sanders must either pay a $250 fine for the fourth degree misdemeanor or fight the ticket. Like that's not even lunch money, man. Well, now we go into the summer. You got summer workouts for football, not just the college, NFL, all kinds of things going on over the summer, basketball going on over the summer. Pennsylvania governor to work with the Eagles and the Steelers on their stadium needs. Didn't Philadelphia just build another stadium? How was your weekend, by the way? Let's see. Russell says, in Phoenix, you go to jail if you're 15 miles an hour over the speed limit. Yeah, I think that depends on who you are, no matter where you are. Depends on who you are, no matter where you are. Brian says, this after the Purdue mascot train had a bad wreck. What are you talking about? What in the world is that all about? But, why do they need more stadiums? I thought their stadiums were in top flight. Yeah, football not that far around the corner, man. Indianapolis Colts, quarterback situation. What's that going to end up being like this year? Aye, there's the rub. Anthony Richardson with some competition. Indiana football, they're staying busy. 2027 linebacker Murray Jackson reflects on his amazing camp experience. You can read that at thehoosier.com. Also, a video breakdown of Indiana running back commitment, Jerrion Campbell, courtesy of Coach Griff. Lots of interviews with players that have been offered. Indiana versus Ohio State recruiting notes. Nice little tidbits in here. There is so much to keep you busy and keep you up to date on what in the world is going on, that it will take you a day just to do that. Looking forward to slowing down a little bit for the summer, rest of June, but then next month, the month of July, Big Ten football media days coming at you. I'm telling you, it's boom. The NBA finals just wrapped up. You've got grassroots basketball going on right now. Camps, summer camps, it doesn't stop. fall camp opens. It's just a nonstop cornucopia of sports going on now. And more like some of the bigger time programs, Indiana jumping into that mix with a football program that people are greatly looking forward to seeing, that they are greatly following. Heath points out, that's right, as was mentioned earlier, NBA draft coming up. NBA draft is not that far off, unfortunately, for the Pacers. Not much going on for them. Although I did see that they got a first-round draft pick back, but that may be for next year that they had lost, but they were able to get that back. So good for them. Because they're going to need it now. It's like Oklahoma City was able to build their program up with some decent draft picks. Benedict Mathurin's probably the last best draft pick that the Pacers have had, right? And that was the year before last, I believe. So, hey, we've got to take a break. Plenty more coming from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Glad to have you along on this Monday. Hope you're managing to stay stay cool, stay calm, stay collected. It's a hot one out there. Back with plenty more after these messages from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. It is a hot one, and it's going to be a hot one. So don't look for it to calm down anytime soon. Cool down anytime soon as temperatures have reached the 90s. As a matter of fact, let's see, 95, 93. Hey, Saturday it cools back off when it rains, back down to the 80s. But we're looking at 90s all week long. NCAA football, not far around the corner, people. Who's going to win the Big Ten this year? Who is going to be one of, and there will definitely be four teams out of the Big Ten, I think. Make the CFP, that is. I still think a 10-2 Indiana will make the CFP because of whom their schedule is. And I think they're going to look better this year to outsiders because of their schedule, but also because I think they're going to be a better team. I think the offense is going to be not only better, but I think it's going to be more rounded. I think the offensive line is going to be markedly better. And I think you're going to be able to see that. And I think that Indiana, with Illinois and Iowa on the early part of the schedule, that gives them an opportunity to show that, hey, this is not the weaker schedule, Indiana, that you thought it was, those outside pundits, because Illinois is already thought of as a more than probably a top 15 team. Don't know what Iowa is really going to be like, but I promise you, they're no slouch either. But Indiana has, they kind of have to overcome this appearance of last year, that although they looked great, which they were great, that people started to think, I don't know, just the losses to Ohio State and Notre Dame just left a certain taste in the mouth of people. Like, well, they can't, you know, they can't play with these big boys. Well, I disagree with that. I think that they can. Last year, no, they couldn't. They weren't quite ready, offensive line-wise. I think that is going to be a different situation this year. But also maybe better for Indiana because they can surprise some people. What's Purdue going to be like? How much improvement are they going to be able to make? Because they're, you know, that's a, boy, you know, you're at the bottom of the barrel, basically, but so was UCLA. And UCLA not only was at the bottom of the barrel, but they were there with a coach that was pretty inexperienced. But I got to tell you, you got to be impressed with what UCLA did as they went along. I was. I think that their coach grew as they went along. He was smart enough to hire Tino Sunseri as his offensive coordinator. I think the Big Ten is going to be fun this year. I think it's going to be more fun this year than it was last year. I think there are going to be more teams that are better. Nebraska is probably going to be better last year. They couldn't meet up to expectations last year. Now, they had a freshman quarterback, so now they've got the same QB, but he's got some experience. It's got to make it better for them. Now, they're not on Indiana's schedule. UCLA is, talked about them. What's Michigan State going to be like? They were in flux last year, also on Indiana's schedule. Maryland's been kind of decimated. I don't see them as being a problem. But then you have all Penn State and a Wisconsin team that is Luke Fickle's under, you know, he's in a little peril. He went there and we all expected better things. Luke Fickle is a really good coach, but things haven't gone well in Wisconsin, which is odd because Wisconsin is a place where things have been fine. But I think that the change that was tried to be made there was too much in the opposite direction, too quick. Who knows? Justin thinks Indiana goes 11-1 again. Yeah, that would be tricky. Possible. I know what my record is. I'll wait till we get closer to let it out, but it's just going to be, college football in general is going to be awesome because the SEC has a lot to prove. They're still smarting from only having three teams into the college football playoff last year. Alabama needs to kind of get back. Of course, it was Kalen DeBoer's first year. They got to get things going again. Auburn, Georgia, are they going to stay up at the top? It's just going to be interesting. Same with the Big Ten. Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, Indiana, Illinois. What about USC? Are they going to be able to bounce back? Because, man, oh, man. USC was not. They just made the Big Ten look all that much better. The Big Ten having won back-to-back national championships last couple of years after college football was pretty much ramrodded by the SEC for several years and pretty much mostly by Alabama, let's be honest. But we shall see. Robert says the ESPN is working on taking care of the SEC. Not sure what that means, but Justin wants a home game playoff appearance. Not really a lot to ask. You just got to finish in the top eight. Well, that's harder than it sounds. although Indiana managed to do that last year. Dustin Epirik, the Pacers beat writer for the Indy Star, joining us on kind of a sad day.
Yeah, very.
I mean, it's sad because it's over, but at the same time, what a hell of a run for these Pacers, and for it to go down the way it did, that really sucked to see. To see their kind of leader go down early like that, boy, that takes a lot out of you early on, and obviously it takes a lot out of what their game plan was as well. But hell of a run by the Pacers to go seven games in deep into the NBA Finals and not able to get it done. But
right
here we are.
Yeah, no, it was awful. Just flat out awful. I mean, obviously, like, I certainly went into that game thinking, okay, you know, for these guys, you got to think, man, you got to this, you know, you got to game seven, whatever happens, you know, like, you got to feel great about yourself. You got to feel like you really accomplished something, you know, like, you took a team that won 68 games to game seven, and they certainly had a shot to win it. So I'm not saying that they should have been like just okay, happy to be there, and they shouldn't have played like they deserved a chance. I mean, they, and again, like first couple minutes of that game, first 7 minutes of that game, and they're right there. You know, it's 16-16, and they're up one at half despite, you know, losing Tyrese Haliburton. But it was like, this was the one thing that could go down that to my mind, they were playing with house money, but like, this was the one way that they could put something on the line that was not house money, you know, that was theirs. And you know, that you could lose something that mattered to you. And yeah, I mean, cause this doesn't just, if we don't know yet what it is, but well, we don't know, not know what it is. Everybody knows what they think it is. And you know, and so if it's that, which would be just, to speak it out loud, an Achilles tendon tear, you know, then you're not just talking he misses all of the offseason, you're talking he misses a lot of next season. And this reconfigures your entire franchise, more or less. I mean, this is your guy. That's not to say they can't, you know, if he's out for that long, you know, certainly they'll have a plan. You know, they certainly, you know, Andrew Nembhard becomes the starting point guard, TJ McConnell becomes the backup. That's not a terrible team that you're putting out there. They're probably still good enough to make the playoffs, but that's, you know, this is the guy obviously who authored some of the most amazing comebacks you've seen in the playoffs. This is a guy who their entire, you know, offensive style is built around. Everything they do is Tyrese Haliburton. The soul of this team is Tyrese Haliburton. And so it was brutal last night. I mean, certainly he knew the risks of this. I mean, I asked him flat out, I mean, did you find out there's not reason to be concerned about worse injury? And this is exactly what I was thinking about. You know, I mean, I was thinking about Kevin Durant, you know, and because he had the pretty much the exact same situation, you know, it's not the exact same. Durant missed four games with a calf strain. I mean, I have no idea grade. Certainly I wasn't looking at each of these guys' MRIs, but it was a calf strain situation that you know, there were some people that were saying like, hey, Durant, why aren't you giving it a go? You know, and he probably looked just fine moving around in practice or something like that. And people were like, okay, like this is the NBA Finals. Why aren't you playing? And Halliburton's kind of thing was, man, like if I can walk, I want to do this. I don't want to leave this opportunity on the table. But you know, the thing is like, yeah, you could play through the calf strain. You know, you can feel like there's enough there that you can move and you can play through the pain and you can handle it and you want to. But then this happens. You know, this is the type of thing, and like you could see he knew instantaneously. You know, like it's even it was bad live, you know, watching it live, and then I rewatched it on tape, not on tape, but you know, on video recording, and it's just like it's so immediate. Like it is so obvious to him, because like you just see the heartbreak. Like he's not even on the floor yet and he knows, and it's just like, you know, it's just awful. And it's just, again, like Halliburton's, you know, like as far as just been covering him, he's been a joy. I mean, he's just been an absolute joy. And like every time, like I even ask him a question, you're like, man, lucky to cover this guy. Makes my job so much easier. Like I could not, like, it's not the same gig, you know, like when, like, he's so good at talking about anything you want to talk about. And such a gracious kid. And he's just done amazing.
He's a stuff. Normal guy. I mean, 2 years ago,
it's hard to be as normal as he is. I mean, he just and also, like, not only is he
he's
normal,
a down to earth guy. 2 years ago, he drove the pace car for the Indianapolis 500, and I had the fortune just to talk to him, just a little interact with him. But I was like, that's what I was floored by instantly. I could just tell, I'm like, this guy's just a normal dude, man, that happens to be a superstar basketball player.
Right. He just likes talking to people is the thing. Like, I mean, there's like little stuff you pick up. Like, you don't know these interactions if you don't cover the league, but like, you know, and I'm sure this is the same way in baseball too, in some degree, you know, not so much football. It's not the same deal, but like, you know, you go to basketball games and, you know, we get pregame, you know, open locker room and stuff. And so what you get to see is these guys interact with clubbies, you know? And so like, cause every, you know, just every team has guys that are assigned to the visitor's locker room and, you know, like they have to go get them food and stuff like that. Like they're there to kind of be runners for them, you know, but also it's just, you know, like do laundry, make sure everybody's stuff is in the right place, like all that kind of stuff. I mean, like you have like home, you know, like traveling equipment managers and they have something to do with this too. But like, there's kind of like road clubbies who have their, you know, have their jobs and like, Tyrese has a good relationship with all of them and like wants to talk, you know, about whatever their, you know, home team is. Like, they'll want to talk football, you know, like Ty will be like, goes to Cleveland. There's a guy he talks to all the time in Cleveland about the Browns, you know, because like, you know, Halliburton's a big football fan. So like, he's like, I remember just going a couple of years ago, like want to talk, know about what they thought about, you know, Deshaun Watson and that signing and everything. Sorry. Excuse me. And he, you know, like he connects with those guys and like, even the Bucks guys are like, you know, he's walking out the door this time and even said like, you know, after they, you know, after the Pacers won in game four, he's like, I'm not going to see you guys again. And he was being cocky. Like he was telling you, like, we're not losing in game five. We're not coming back to game six. I'm not going to see you guys. It's been real, you know? And so like, he's being arrogant, but they were still like, you know what? Like I literally heard them say like, you're our favorite, you know, you're our favorite guy. And it was just like, that's what he's like to everybody. And Kevin Pritchard said this, and like, you know, this was going into 2023, you know, before they, when they signed him, he goes, I've never met a connector like Tyrese ever, like as a person, as a human being, you know, he said in terms of people that understands everybody could connect with anybody from your CEO to your janitor. He's like, I've never met anybody who can do that. Like Tyrese can do that. And I wholeheartedly agree. You know, wholeheartedly agree. He's just such an easy guy to connect with. And he gets the game. Like from my standpoint, I've never covered a player who's better at talking about his teammates, like as far as like giving you the quotes that you really need to kind of put somebody in perspective, like why they matter. Like I go back to look at like all the bigger profiles I've done about this team, and I've got a money quote from Tyrese every time. Like every single one of them is like spot on insight you could not get anywhere else. You know, like if you read, you know, I was just reading my McConnell story because like everyone was talking about TJ McConnell this week. And I go back and I'm reading like Tyrese's stuff and he had this great line. He goes like, I was just trying to figure out like, why can TJ score? He's this guy 6'1", you know, like you gotta know what he's gonna do. He's easy to read on film. Like, okay, why can he still do this? Why is he having his, you know, this is last year. So it's like, why is he having the best offensive season of his career at 32? And he goes, he's got great breaks, like ability to stop and start. Like that's a perfect line. That that's just the first line. And he keeps going. And he's like, you know, like, because I say this all the time. Like I tell him, like, TJ, you're not the most, you know, intimidating guy to look at in the NBA. He's like, because he knows this. I'm saying this. He's like, but he knows this. But like, he says, you could look at him and think you're going to get a rest covering him. He's like, that's not the rest guy. That's the guy that exhausts you. He's like, you get out there and you keep thinking, okay, like you're in his spot. Like, no, he's going to keep running. Like he's going to wear you out. And the line is great. I mean, he's just so good at, but like, you have to care about somebody who's not you to be that good. You know, at talking about that, you have to care about each one of your teammates so deeply to be able to understand what makes them all tick and what makes them all good. And that makes them him so good just being, you know, a media personality. But like, that's why he's a good point guard, because he gets everybody's strength. He understands everybody's weakness, but like he understands his teammates at this super deep level. And it's, so it's just like, you know, just again, just from a human level, you see this and you're like, this is awful. And I mean, it was like truly, I think you always say like the end of a season is like a funeral, you know, like people are mourning the end of it. And it's especially true in college. It's more true in college because these kids are graduating or they're transferring or whatever it's going to be, you know, like in the pros, you're usually going to get them all back or close to it. You might lose a couple guys, but for the most part, the core is probably going to be there, especially with this group. But it was literally like it looked like a funeral home. Like I saw guys like in suits, like doing that look, you know, when you don't know what to say and you just hug each other. Like that's what like I saw a couple of those, you know, and like that. I mean, like this isn't the players, like this is staff, executives, you know, stuff like that in the hallway. And it's just like they were stunned, you know, they're absolutely stunned. And so it was, you know, an absolute heartbreak thing to watch again. Like, I don't care if they win or lose. Like, I truly did not. Like, this is always like, it's like not even, I'm not rooting for me. I, you know, like truly it's like, hey, like this is for y'all, you know, like you guys are fans, you know, like this is for this team, whatever. Like I got no personal rooting interest, but it was like, just was awful to watch. And it changed the entire thing. Like you're seeing confetti coming down. Like I almost just felt like they should stop playing, you know, like that's kind of what it felt like. It was like, whatever happens here, this is awful. You know, this just sucks. So it was just like, it was like one of the tougher things I've seen, you know, like watching sports, just like, you know, and cause again, he knew the risk. Like I asked him, you know, like, what are you like, did you find out that this isn't going to be like that you're good, you know, that you're not going to like risk anything. And he's like, no, I didn't. And he like kind of smiled and laughed. And like, I even like, so I like laughed with him. And like looking back, it's like, oh my God. You know, like part of you wants to like go back in time and tackle him and say, Ty, don't do this. You know, like you don't know, but like and so it's just like, you certainly, I didn't know it was going to happen or anything like that. And none of us knew it was going to happen, but you're just like, man, like that's, it was just like, in looking back, it's not an eerie moment. Like, cause obviously again, you know, he's alive. He's going to, you know, like he's going to make a recovery, but it's like, this is going to cost him, you know, if it is what we all think it is, it's going to cost him a year.
Yeah, but and he had to go, and even he knew the risk probably. But you don't have a choice. It's
oh, you do. Happen. I mean, you have a choice. It's just the issue is
you
just,
do, but in your you're mind,
gonna regret it either way. The issue is it's a roulette game, and you know it's like if you don't play, then you never know. You know that's the tough part. If you don't play, then you never know. You know, you like, you know, that's a risk, you know, that's a possibility, but you don't know that it would have happened. And so if you lose in game six, you always regret it. And you think it's never going to happen. Like you can tell yourself that you weren't going to hurt yourself, you know, and that it wasn't going to happen. And, you know, you're good from the calf strain in a month. And you're thinking to yourself, man, like, what if I would have done it? But, you know, this is on the table.
It's game seven. There's no way you don't go. There's just no way there. I don't know that there's this no is
the
way thing.
This was on the other side, you know, this, and like, and so I, you do wonder, I mean, like there are medical staff somewhere who are probably kicking themselves because like Ty has said in the past, like they're good at telling me, at saving me from myself. And I am sure all morning again, like the Pacers staff have really good medical staff. Like, I mean, I know people are going to be like, well, they had the Oladipo thing and they had the Paul George thing. First off, they didn't have anything to do with Paul George. And, you know, Oladipo's thing, you know, like there's complications there. That's not all in the Pacers. But like their thought was, you know, like they're sitting here this morning thinking like, I should have stopped him. You know, I should have told him you can't, you know, because if you're wrong, this thing is too big. You know, like this isn't you take off 3 weeks in the off season or a month in the off season, you can't do anything. You know, this could change your whole career, you know? And like, you think about it as like a gamble. It's like, okay, like you go into last night's game, you're playing with house money. Cause you're like, you're further along. You had any business being, this is the only way that you could put your house up for collateral, you know, like, this is that, like, that's what it becomes. This is the only way that you're making a gamble that costs you something that you didn't, you know, that you had when you started, basically. Like everything else they could gamble, they had when they started, you know, didn't have when they started. They got it. It was all new, you know, it was all stuff that they'd won. This is the only thing you could put on the line that you come away feeling like you lost something that you had, you know, before the playoffs started, and now you're in desperately worse shape than you were, you know. But
yeah, because now you're looking at a team that was, you know, a game away from winning the NBA championship to a team that may be hard-pressed to make the playoffs next year because of the start, even when Tyrese gets back, and he'll get back, but it's going to be – the season is only 4 months away, and I don't know the extent of the Achilles, you know, injury, but depending upon how severe it is, Achilles injuries take about as long as anything to freaking heal. We're talking 6 to 8 months at times for an Achilles to properly heal. And do the math, 6 to 8 months from now, they're possibly not in the playoffs because of that.
Yeah, I mean, again, they can put together a functional team if they don't have him. Certainly, they've won games without him before. You let Andrew Nembhard become the starting point guard for a season, and, you know, like, he's used to this. You know, he's had games, obviously, Nembhard, you know, Halliburton's had stretches that he's missed. He's missed somewhere in the four, you know, he missed the 10 games a couple years ago with an elbow sprain. You know, last year he had the hamstring strain. You know, he missed some time this year with back stuff. I mean, like, Halliburton has injuries. He has things that have kept him out of games, but just obviously nothing like this. So, I mean, you know, you still have an all-star in Pascal Siakam. You still, you know, like, I mean, I think they'll still sign Miles Turner. But I don't know that, you know, I mean, like, it didn't, you know, certainly, like, nobody in the front office was waiting to run to us and be like, hey guys, this changes our whole world. Wait till you tell you what we're going to do. Like, I mean, they all walked past us. We saw Kevin Pritchard, we saw Chip Buchanan, we saw Ted Wu, all of them just looking just ashen faced, and stunned, you know, cause their whole world just changed. You know, their entire calculation just changed. Frankly, they got lucky. You know, they made a smart move. They didn't know how smart it was. I'm sure, you know, obviously by trading their first round draft pick for next year's first round draft pick to get it back. You know, like, cause they were going to pick 23rd, in this draft. And certainly if this team's bad, you know, you have a chance to get, you know, cause they basically, they sent out their 2026 pick in the Siakam trade and went to New Orleans, and they got it from New Orleans by giving them this year's first round pick. And so, you know, certainly it stands to the possibility of next year's being better now, because of this, and them maybe needing somebody next year. And, you know, they were going to be hard pressed to find, and still will be hard pressed to find playing time for anybody that would have taken at 23. So, but, you know, like, can a group with Nembhard starting, McConnell off the bench, Mathurin in the starting lineup with Aaron Nesmith, Pascal Siakam, and Miles Turner, can that team be a playoff team? Yeah. You know, it sure can. But do you put it up there with the Clevelands and the, you know, not Boston's obviously gonna have the same issue, because it's dealing with Jason Tatum being out with an Achilles tendon tear. You know, Milwaukee is gonna have to figure out what to do with itself because Damian Lillard's out with the same injury. And so that's gonna shake up the entire East. I mean, I think Orlando's gonna make a push now, and be better. Detroit, certainly, you look at as a team that's gonna be right in there. But you don't immediately know where you fit. I mean, I do think you look at them and stay, they're probably still better than Chicago and Miami or somebody like that, or in better place. You know, we'll see what other teams make a run. If there's somebody else who turns themselves into a decent team, you know, this year, that somebody that was a lottery team that becomes something better, you know, we'll see. But I would think they'll still be playoff caliber, but instead of being a 4 year, 6, 7, or 8, you know, somewhere in that range, and you're trying to hold it together and say, like, okay, like, you know, he's coming back, you know, like, we have to hang together before, you know, until he comes back. But I don't know, you know, I don't know if he comes back next season, you know, cause you don't want to come back and rush it. You know, that's the worst thing you can do. So, you know, again, if it's that, certainly haven't seen that, but I think everybody thinks it's that. So, you know, but yeah, I mean, it's something that rocks your whole entire world as far as what you're going to do.
And a question, you know, the Pacers reclaimed a first round pick for 26, I believe, right?
Yeah, right. So I just,
okay. So they get that back. Don't have one for this year. Do you tank next year? And
no,
you're going to, I know that you don't, would not acknowledge it, and
not, they're not that bad. I mean, at the end of the day, they're,
I know,
not,
but it's going to be so hard. It's like, man,
you
look,
don't,
at Oklahoma City. They're what, two? How many years ago were they from who sure. did they pull in with that 12th pick? That was one of their starters.
Jalen Williams.
I think it was Jalen Williams. Yeah. But and then look, Chet Holmgren. He's only been in the league, what, 3 years?
Sure.
So they, yeah, no, well, I mean, we already know how young of a team they are, which it's crazy that how young they are that they had the success they did.
Yeah, you can't make these guys tank. Period. You can't make these guys tank. You know, like you couldn't. It was hard to make these guys tank when 2 years ago. You know, like they had to get to a point where it was like, guys, we don't really need to get to the playing round. Like, I don't know what kind of conversations had to be had. But like, you know, they absolutely, you know, when they went 35-47, like they were totally in a position where it made sense for them to tank. It made sense for everybody to tank because that was Wembanyama year, you know, and Wembanyama was on the board. It made sense for everybody that wasn't going to make the playoffs to just take it easy and cruise and take as many losses as you can and try to get as many, you know, lottery tickets as you could get. And you know, those guys, like, you know, at the end of the year, they shut Halliburton down, they shut Turner down, you know, they didn't have Siakam yet, obviously, and they kind of pieced out the last 2 weeks of the year, more or less, and just said, okay, like, they were like, you know, maybe still in shouting distance of a play-in spot, but it was just like, guys, it doesn't make sense for us to all go out and do this. We should go take the, you know, whatever pick we can get and move on, and they got Jairus Walker out of that. But, like, you know, they were all the way through March still in it and fighting, you know, still in it and getting after it. I mean, they had to shut some guys down. T.J. McConnell had this unbelievable game in April, like, the you know, where he was starting. And I can't even remember what he even had. I remember he just Carlos said something about having this indomitable spirit. And then the next game he was out, and I wanted to ask him, like, is he out with indomitable spirit? Is that the reason? Like, is that the reason he can't play today? It's because he's got indomitable spirit and you can't have him out there and chancing winning another game. But you know, it was not easy to get them to, you know, call it a day. And, you know, that was the right move organizationally for them to do. But they went all out with that team. And I think that team, you know, and they were better for having tried. I mean, I think a lot of people were like, why aren't they just flat tanking? Like, one of the best players you're going to see come through this draft is available. Why don't you want every single lottery ticket? But it was like, you had to let them grow. You know, they're not here if that team's not allowed to blossom, if that team's not allowed to go play like it was supposed to, like it wanted to. You know, like, those guys grew up a lot that year. Like, you can go back and circle a lot of lessons that they learned that season when they didn't make the playoffs, that, you know, they wouldn't have been an Eastern Conference Finals team last year. They wouldn't have been in the NBA Finals this year if that team isn't allowed to go play. And so, the same thing goes for next year. They're like, if this is what we think it is, and if Halliburton's out for all or most of next season, you cannot tell these guys that just went to the NBA Finals that they've got a tank. There's just no way. It doesn't. Like, these guys, they're too good of competitors. Pascal Siakam had to stop everything he was doing to come here, you know, to come to Indiana, play for this team. There's just no way in the eye and tell him he's got to stop. What you're telling is, you guys hang in there. Tyrese is coming back. Like, no one is like, oh, well, we're going to be so much better if we get a top five pick in next year's draft. They're going to be like, no, we're playing. And wherever the chips fall, that's where they fall. And we'll be better when everybody comes back. But we're not, you know, like, this team is not going to be held back. It's not going to, you know, tie itself up and say we're not really playing because we need a draft pick. You're just not telling these guys that's how it's going to go.
How incredible would it be that if next year and Tyrese is gone for 3/4 of the season, you know, at that point, it doesn't matter. He's not really impacting whether or not they make it. But if this team is able to make the playoffs next year, that is a testament of beyond most
it's
things
not,
I can think
it's,
of.
It's not as out of the question as you might think. But this, I mean, like, he's a great player. Don't get me wrong. I just spent the first however many minutes of this segment telling how great of a player he is. But these guys aren't trash without him. Like, this is not a bottom of the barrel lottery team without him. This will not, my initial kind of, like, back of the, you know, napkin math, tells me they win 42, 43 games, you know, without him. And that's a playoff team in the East. especially. And, you know, like that's, and I'm probably shortchanging them, you know, like I'm probably being, you know, like I'm probably holding them back, you know, that's, they're not a terrible, like there, it is not going to be a shock if they're still a playoff team, if they still, you know, I mean, they'd probably, you know, do I think they're probably a seven seed? You know, that's where I think they probably track, you know, and that gets, you know, you still in a position where you get home games in the play-in round and, you know, you have a chance to get in there. And you know, that's kind of my initial thought. Maybe they're a little worse. Maybe they're a little better. Like, I don't think they're a 20 win team. You know, I don't think they're that, you know, like they were up one point on what became the champs last night, you know, with the group of guys they're going to need. So, you know, they beat, you know, Halliburton had a groin strain in, January. And, you know, they were down 53-40 to, Cleveland, you know, top seed in the East. And went out and outscored them 68-40 in the second half and won. So, like, that's what this group can do. They're still going to have, you know, Andrew Nembhard's all-defensive quality player, you know, that you're going to be able to put out on people every night. You're still going to have Aaron Nesmith to go chase people around. Again, you still have an all-star caliber player in Pascal Siakam. I don't know how they play offense. I don't know what that looks like. It's not going to be as pretty. You know, they're going to rely on probably Siakam and Mathurin to go play ISO ball. And it's going to be an entirely different system in an entirely different world. Over the course of game. I mean, I don't know what that looks like in terms of the beauty of it, but they're not, they don't, you know, they don't immediately lack so much talent that they can't win basketball games in the regular season.
Yeah. And it's going to be fun to see what happens next year, to see how they can bounce back and, but nothing else. It gave the city of Indianapolis a great long run. It welded itself in with the other sports that were going on all the way. We're going all the way back to last month with the Indianapolis 500, and just continues to move forward. And that's the difference, I think. Now, other mid-major cities like Oklahoma City, maybe, but they don't have the other things that are going on that they can tie it together. They're just. Right. It was awesome to see the Pacers and the Racers tied together. You know, it's the ability to tie this stuff together. There's no other place that can do that, which that's incredible, because you get to the big cities. Well, hell, half the people don't even know that the game may be going on in Los Angeles, which that's maybe a little facetious, but
they know.
They definitely know in New York, New York is awesome because New York sports fans are great because they're crazy.
Yeah, so, no, exactly. No, I mean, all of this stuff is cool as far as fan base is connecting to, you know, their teams. Like, that's one of those things. Like, you go around and you see how different, you know, cities connect to different teams. And it's all different, but there's beauty to all of it. You know, there's beauty to how the – you know, how New York connects to the Knicks and the Yankees and the Mets and everything. And there's beauty to how Boston, you know, connects to the Celtics and the Red Sox and New England and the Patriots and the Bruins. And everybody. Like, they're, you know, like you do get to see this stuff up close over the course of the year, no matter, especially when you're covering the playoffs. You know, you see that up close. And you know, Oklahoma City was live last night. I mean, like, it was just, you know, like, I didn't get out until after. Apparently it got weird, you know, in post-game celebrations and stuff like that. Like, good, bad, and otherwise. Apparently too out of hand to start with, but then less out of hand by the time I got home to my hotel. I don't know. But bottom line, you know, like, this is their only pro team. And, you know, this is the one team that whole state connects on, because they're all fighting over Oklahoma and Oklahoma State half the year, or most of the year. And so this is kind of their bonding, you know, team, basically. And it was kind of cool to see a smaller spot, you know, get into it. But Indy is different. And in Indiana is about basketball. And so, like, I mean, I kind of feel like during the course of the season, everybody is locked in on IU and Purdue, and they kind of wake up in the middle of March and they're like, hey, Dust, how's the Pacers been? But, like, you know, I think there was such a deep connection to this group. And I'm sorry, I know I'm making fun of you guys a little bit, and I didn't mean to do that. You know, like, I don't know that I've seen it this close as far as people really bonding with the team and talking about, would have been like to follow them for so many years and seen this opportunity. And there was just so many people you'd see on Twitter or everywhere else are saying, like, man, I've never bonded this closely to a team. Like, this is the type of, and it is the type of guys, you know, that a city falls in love with forever. You know, like, I mean, like I think back to, you know, teams I rooted for when I was a kid, you know, like the Pirate teams when I was 8, 9, and 10 that were playoff teams. And you just, you form a bond because you don't just care about Barry Bonds back then, you care about Jose Lind, you know, and like people didn't just care about Tyrese Haliburton and Pascal Siakam. They cared about Ben Shepherd and Aaron Nesmith and Andrew Nembhard and like the way they got the way they played, the personalities, all of it ropes into a team, to a city that really understands basketball, you know, really gets, you know, gets the sport in its bones. And, you know, I think they did a good job of connecting all that. Obviously, Rick Carlisle pulling, you know, just pulling that in 49 states line, you know, out of his pocket in the, you know, in the post-game celebration in the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, people really connected and bonded with this team. And, I mean, and it's just, it always was, you know, and has been for the last 3 years, an incredibly close and incredibly fun group of guys. And to see, you know, it's basketball the way it's supposed to be played. It's ball movement. It's guys that believe in each other, want each other to succeed. And it starts with Haliburton and works its way down. These guys really celebrate each other's victories. They really line up, not just, you know, for accomplishing what they accomplish in basketball, but in life. You know, like they, you know, they show up for TJ McConnell's and Benedict Mathurin's stuff at Arizona when they're, you know, on the road, you know, and they're getting inducted to the Ring of Honor. You know, they're celebrating with Obi Toppin when he proposes to his girlfriend in Paris. Like, they stop everything, you know, for each other to go do, you know, and so like that makes a team easy to connect to a city, and it did.
Absolutely. Dustin Aperic from the Indy Star, beat writer for the Indiana Pacers, with us right now. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios right after these messages. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. Oh, the day after the NBA season has come to a close. That means I guess the sports seasons aren't closed. You got baseball that's going on, but kind of gives us a break of sorts, because we're a ways off before baseball playoffs. And hopefully Dustin will get to take some time to rest a little bit. Of course,
not yet.
No. In between weddings, maybe. The wedding.
DJ McConnell gave me hell every single game. Everyone.
You should be the wedding singer.
Yeah. No, McConnell before every single game was like, oh, glad you can make it. Every game, the rest of the finals, he was like, glad to see you don't have a wedding. We appreciate you're here. So, you know, like, I had to appreciate that from TJ.
So it's not just us that is caught up on that. So you
TJ put me over every game, every single one.
Of anybody, I figured it would either be TJ McConnell or Tyrese Haliburton.
I'm actually surprised. I was told to expect Ty to give me hell, and he didn't. I think he had too much going on. But TJ made a point to find time out of his day every day to make sure that you know, he was aware that they noticed that I was not there. So
I have not gotten to spend time around TJ McConnell, but he's from what I said about. Yeah. From what I said about Tyrese earlier, he seems like the exact same. I mean, most of these guys seem like they have this personality, and you almost have to be this team. I don't know that I've ever seen a team in pro sports like this one. And I don't think that there's bias going on. I just look at these individual players and how they interact with each other, how they interact with people, how they interact with the public, with the press. And it's like, wow, okay. I know that there's somebody on there that probably has this, you know, different mentality, but boy, for the most part, gee whiz, this is like a group of guys that you would almost play rec league with. And I mean it from the standpoint of their just outgoing personalities. And TJ McConnell, man, you want to talk about, is there anybody in the NBA that gets more out of, and I don't want this to sound like he's not a talented athlete, because obviously he is more than that because of what he does and against and who he does it against. But is there anybody that gets more out of less than TJ McConnell and does it consistently? Jesus, he had 10 straight points last night. I don't know how many games where he's had 6 points consecutive or more and doing it in the freaking paint or within 8 feet. It's a, that's not, that should not be possible for a guy his size.
Yeah, no, I mean, but he's amazing. And it is, it's wild to see. I feel like everywhere I go, people are like, wow, like they don't understand the TJ McConnell phenomenon until they see it up close. You know, like I remember sitting next to, this was last year, and this was when Halliburton had to miss a game. And Halliburton, you know, like I remember, like there was a, there's a TV personality in Sacramento. He's not personality. He's an anchor. And he's a super cool guy. His name's Kevin Johns. And he, I think it's either Kevin Johns or Kevin John. And I know there's the Kevin Johns is a former IU coordinator. And I think he looked at me at one point, and McConnell had like 20 points in this game. The Pacers managed to win it with Halliburton out. And he goes, he stole the line from Shaq. He's like, I'm sorry, TJ McConnell. I was not familiar with your game. Like, wow. Like, everybody watches this guy up close and they're like, really? That's what I've been missing. Like, oh my Lord. And because he, you know, like I said, I did that whole story on him last year, just being like, okay, like, how does he do this offensively? Let's really dig into this. And like, and I thought Marcus Thompson also from The Athletic did a fantastic job of capturing that in miniature without the same amount of time to do it as I had. And he just said basically it's like watching like Pac-Man just world running through and chomping on stuff and being while he's being chased with ghosts. And I saw Marcus and I'm like, I hate you for that line because that was so good. But he like he just it, like his he just this is so it is taught, you know, so well. I mean, again, like TJ comes from the premier basketball family in Pittsburgh. You know, like, I mean, it's a football town, you know, it's probably baseball after that, you know, like it's obsessed with hockey, you know, it's got its basketball niche, you know, like it does. Like a lot of coaches come out of Pittsburgh, not a lot of players come out of Pittsburgh, which I think is interesting. Like it tells you a lot about the city that it's like that, that there the people that are obsessed with it are obsessed with it. There's just not the talent. It's just not fertile there. But McConnell's, you know, like McConnell's dad, really accomplished high school coach. McConnell's aunt Susie is an Olympian, and you know, was a college coach, was a WNBA coach, is back to being a high school coach again. You know, she's still the most, even with TJ as far as he is, still the most accomplished member of that family. You know, his sister was in the WNBA, got hurt. Like they are obsessed, and like Tim did a great job of coaching him in this very specific way to take advantage of his gifts. I mean, like, you know, if you don't think he's athletic, you have a limited idea of what the word athletic means, because he has a motor that is absolutely unstoppable, and he is quick, and his ability to stop on a dime and shoot is really something. If you look at how downhill and how fast he's playing, the fact that he's able to pull up and hit a 6-foot jumper with touch is something that's very, very hard to do, because a lot of people smoke that. You know, you pull up from there and you've got too much momentum, you've got too much juice on it, and you pop it off the backboard, and so you don't know what's going to happen there. And, you know, his ability to do that over and over again is something. I mean, the thing he does where he runs under the baseline and curls around, like, just basically just keeps you running and makes the shot. Like, you don't see that in this league. Like, there's just not other people who do this stuff. And he has just created this game that is fashioned out of entirely different material than the rest of the league is. But it's very, very hard to stop. I mean, he had a worse year this year because people finally figured him out a little. You know, his shots were a little bit harder to get to because people finally figured out what you had to do against him on the baseline. They figured out that, like, when he runs underneath, you got to be ready for him to flip it up on a reverse. Like, you have to be ready to try to pin that thing off the glass because it's coming. Like, you have to be so aware of what he wants to do every time. And it finally got a little harder for him to shoot. And you see, like, all of his numbers tick down a little this year because people finally put the amount of time it takes to study him to figure him out. And like, and it took this many years for people to do that and take it seriously. And he still shot right around 50% and averaged like, I don't know, 8.5 a game and probably, I don't know, 14, 15, 16 per 36, something like that. But he was fantastic in the finals. I mean, he had a bunch of turnovers last night because he was just trying to play as hard as he could to will it. And that puts you in a position where you know, when you're being that aggressive, you're going to have turnovers. And when you're trying to play even faster than you can, you know, you put yourself in that spot, especially against this team that's so very good at turning you over. They've got so much length, so many switchable defenders, and they were just blitzing the heck out of him and them hard, and just harassing them into stuff. And you get to, you know, when you take Halliburton off the floor, you get to move Lou Dort onto somebody that makes his life, you know, newly miserable, you know, like, Nembhard had to deal with Lou Dort straight up, and Nembhard's played ball in Canada with Lou Dort and knows how good of a defender Lou Dort is. And, you know, it became a problem. But, you know, McConnell was – he had a fantastic series. And it's been cool to see everybody see that. And you know, like, I mean, he one thing he said is, like, you know, during the course of it, he's like, I hope everybody sees that people can tell you you're too small and you're too this and you're too that, and you can prove them wrong. And TJ's obsessed with that. You know, like, I did the story on him. Like, he got his first scholarship offered from Duquesne when he was a sophomore, and he was 5'7", 125 at the time. He was little, you know. Like,
there's nobody any sport that I would least want to play against that's someone like TJ McConnell, who has ability, but has more of a desire to prove you wrong than anything, because he is going to wear you out with that. And he does just that without question. I can also say this about the Indiana Pacers. I don't think any NBA team has probably ever had as many people show up for watch parties in their gym when they weren't even there than the Pacers did. What a grand show of support by their fans. I'm like, who gets 17, 18, 19,000 people per watch party?
People do. When you're down to the last one, they do. They got to go somewhere, you know, like.
Well, I meant before this, though, but I mean, they were doing this throughout this
series. They've been doing this. That's true. They've been doing this throughout the playoffs. It hasn't just been the finals. You're right. You know, like, they have been showing up. Like, I think every round, you know, all, I don't know how far back, but it's been back, you know, you're right, to that point. Now, for the finals, you know, like, you're going to get anybody to show up in your gym, because they're like, they want a place that they're going to be able to spill out from, and a place to watch it. And it's different to see it on a big screen. You know, you see it in the Jumbotron. It's built for that, you know, and it's super cool. Like, I, you know, it seems super cool. I remember, like, we had a watch party when I was at Penn State and they were in the Sweet 16. Like, I went to that. You know, and they got dusted by Temple, and we still acted like idiots afterwards anyway. And they're selling tickets for like $200 to get in the watch party. It was insane. It was nuts.
Wow. You know?
Like, I don't think that's what it was. I mean, I think that's what it went for once they sold out, and they sold out, you know, and that was pretty amazing.
What can the people look for you this week, my friend?
Well, usually we have exit interviews, and we're not doing those apparently with the players, but we'll probably get to talk to Rick Carlisle and somebody from the front office sometime this week, and we'll get to ask those guys, what do you do now? And so that is going to be the theme of this week, is what do they do now? And so it's, you know, just from a, you know, yeah, personnel standpoint, everything, how do you guys function going forward? And so it's going to be interesting to see just what all that looks like, in, you know, just in what they do, you know, because obviously everything that seemed like it had an obvious answer or a close to obvious answer is up for debate. You know, like, I'd be surprised if they didn't still re-sign Miles Turner, just because it just would seem like such pulling the rug under somebody. It seemed like, as every indication seemed like both teams wanted to go that way. Both sides wanted to go that way, but it does make you think twice. And obviously Miles had a very tough finals, you know, did not have a great finals at all. And, you know, so that raises some questions. You know, Mathurin's situation, you would think, changes, you know, because he's up for extension. And you have to ask yourself, you know, like, do you or do you not? And how far are you willing to go on that one, becomes a question. And so, there, and going forward, do you try to make a deal? Is there something you decide you need, or are there guys that you would trade to try to, you know, get an upgrade as a player that you wouldn't have ordinarily? Do you make some decisions about kind of your more marginal free agents? You have to make some choices at backup center. You're going to have some open spots. Do you do something else with a veteran minimum deal than you would have done otherwise? There's going to be a lot of questions that they have to answer with this. And again, you know, we're not going to know. I don't know when we're going to know if this is what we think it is. Usually it's the next day. You know, I remember they had two Achilles tendon tears in the first 8 games of the season, and we found both of those out, you know, about, you know, usually mid to late afternoon the next day. And so I may or may not be on a plane at that point. I don't know.
We'll certainly find out. Make sure you're keeping up with everything going on with the Pacers as it continues on, because story's never over. Dustin DePirik is your man to do so with the Indy Star. Follow him. Give yourself a subscription. Keep local papers alive. I am a fervent reader of the newspapers. Dustin DePirik, as always, brother, thank you.
Much appreciated, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you, my friend. That's going to pretty much wrap it up for us today from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Back tomorrow. Do it again. We'll catch up with everything that went on over the weekend. Like I said, the Charlie Hughes was happening and lots of other events elsewhere. And now start preparing for the summer going forward with camps and whatnot. But looking forward to all of that. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. Go out, have yourselves a great day. Until then, I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.